Continuing the topic which I started to speak on this morning, on the social role of women in Krishna consciousness, or even for that matter, not in Krishna consciousness. What we might call broadly Vedic roles and modern roles. I've spoken on many of these topics previously, but as with all of these topics, they require to be repeatedly spoken on because people forget or you may not have heard it. And also I'm bringing many of the topics together in this series of lectures. Questions may be reserved for when I finish this series of lectures. An overview of varying attitudes in the role of women, which also means the role of men. In the purport to the verse from Bhagavad Gita, which I read this morning, Srila Prabhupada said that because the demons do not follow the injunctions from the Vedic literature, and he particularly cited an injunction of Manu that women should not be given independence. Prabhupada said because of that, the moral condition of women today is not very good, and family life is practically an imagination. So we can see that in the modern age, family stability is less and less there for various family. Well, as I was saying, because there are various factors to be considered. In modern society, emphasis is on sex, and in family life also. I see so many cases of devotees, a young boy, and they're given a photo of various girls to look at, which previously they wouldn't have. They're first to improve. Of course, photography is a fairly recent introduction in human society or inhuman society, whichever you want to consider it. But the first time the husband and wife would see each other, or even know what each other looked like, would be at the wedding ceremony. And gradually they introduce various things, meeting and having a little chat before to see if you like each other, swapping photos. But I see that even among devotees, it's very common the boy will say, oh no, not beautiful enough. They themselves, they may be even uglier than my facial features. They may be quite ugly themselves, but they think that they only want to marry Aishwarya Rai or a clone of her. Of course, she's also finished now. That's another thing. I mean, I guess they're keeping her going with makeup and all this kind of thing. But that's the point, because good looks, it only lasts a short time. It's illusory anyway, because good looks is just a covering of skin on blood, bones, mucus, etc. And whatever your wife looks like, or your husband looks like, whatever, you have to live with them. And to have a sweet personality is much more important if you have to live with someone than a sweet face. It's a trick of Maya that we think that a woman who's very beautiful looking must have a very beautiful personality, but often it's round the other way actually, because especially in the modern age where sex is so much emphasized, women can use their good looks to play with men and exploit them. That often happens. So, when sex is the center, instead of in family life, duty, responsibility, dharma, then there's going to be instability, because sex never satisfied, despite what Dr. Kamaraj says. I was mentioning this morning Dr. Kamaraj, who appears on Tamil, that's his name actually, I mean, appears on Tamil TV once a week and lectures everyone about how you should have sex as much as possible, but it doesn't satisfy. He's a medical doctor, and he's drilling everyone that you have to have lots of sex. A necessity for human society, but it doesn't satisfy. And then you start to think, well, there's something wrong. I'm not satisfied. There must be something wrong with my wife. Okay, let's try another one. This wife was no good. I'll try another one. Maybe someone else's wife. And people, because they think that sex is the highest goal of life, then they think that, well, you know, if you're not satisfied, then try somewhere else. But then you're never satisfied, because sex doesn't satisfy. It's just an illusion that one will be satisfied with this. The only thing that can actually satisfy one is surrender to Krishna. And indulgence in sex is a complete block to advancing in Krishna consciousness. So family stability is down. The divorce law has been introduced, which means that people will take advantage of it, and they do. And social problems are very prominent. In the United States of America, which is the paragon for all, or the role model for all other countries to follow, and they're quite intent that everyone should follow it. Countries like Iraq, which don't want to follow it, they get bombed for their impertinence and killed, and because they don't want to follow the American way of life. So the gifts of America are given to them forcefully. So they're very convinced that their way of life is better. But factually, they have more social problems. In America, I think I saw some figures like 70% of the population seeks psychiatric help at some point. That means 70% are crazy or consider themselves possibly crazy, and the other 30% they might not be crazy, they might be also too. I mean, apparently everyone is crazy, because everyone is pursuing a wrong goal of life. Even those who don't, to go for psychiatric help you have to be pretty desperate, right? But everyone's frustrated. So what's the use of having cell phones and electric fans and air conditioning and so many gizmos and gadgets, and everyone's completely frustrated because they have a wrong aim of life. Sex is at the center. They think that's it. That's the most important thing. And on the basis of that, there are so many problems, so many misconceptions. Srila Prabhupada personally, he identified this puffed up concept of womanly life, as he calls it in this Bhagavad Gita purport, as one of the key factors, if not the key factor, in the distress, discontent and instability of modern society. And he spoke very openly and strongly about this, despite the fact that it was completely against the grain even in the 1970s, and he didn't become popular by doing that. When a woman journalist who was interviewing him and about this, and Prabhupada was saying, yes, women are less intelligent, and she wanted to accept that, and so many things. And so the woman asked sarcastically, so you think that all the problems in human society are caused because women are not submissive to men? And Prabhupada said, yes. She said it sarcastically. She couldn't believe that Prabhupada would uphold such a view. So they wrote it off as some kind of Victorian or antiquated or out of date attitude that Prabhupada had. But that's the problem. They think that now we have discovered some better way of thinking, a better social model than people had in the past. Now we are more advanced. But look at their society. It's a total mess. No one's happy. There is no stable family life is rare, and they're so messed up that now they have what they call homosexual and lesbian families, in which two men, they get married in a church, quite likely, and then they adopt some children, or two women, they adopt some children, that's their family. They have two mothers and no father, or two fathers and no mother. And the children, they just get assigned to some, or they may impregnate the lesbian. Lesbian means, I don't know how to explain it, I don't want to. 200 rupees. She's running away. Why, you know, what's the problem? Just see. People have so little lack of concern or discipline. So it's totally bizarre. And actually it means that American Western society is finished. It can't stand. It has no moral strength. We see in the histories of all these great empires, Roman Empire, Egyptian, Byzantine Empire, all these, that when they descend into gross sense gratification, then they're overrun. They fall down because people don't have any moral strength or principles to stand up. In Iraq, if it was man to man fighting, there's no doubt the Americans would be totally defeated by the Arabs. But because they have a lot of technology, they're able to keep on top. But otherwise, the American army, they're smoking dope and taking all kinds of drugs, and they have no self-discipline. How can? So it's finished. It's just a matter of time. And even American sociologists have noted this, that actually Western civilization it's in a decaying stage. It's not going to last. But America's very. I'm just saying America. I don't hate Americans, or actually most of Americans in their dealings. I've been to America a few times. They're very nice people. But I'm just talking about the general ethos, which comes not only out of that country, but it's identified with that country. I guess because Hollywood and the TV serials and all that, it's predominantly comes out of there. So we could say Western or modern or whatever. But as America is like the flagship of modern degradation, and of course it's not everyone in America who sponsors that or even likes that either. So we have to remember that we're talking in very general ways about very complex social situations. So like I said, I'm not against America per se. So there's whole different attitudes to which most Americans also maintained even a short time ago, and they think that this is right and everyone is wrong. In the modern age we got it right, and everyone else in the past they're wrong, and now we have to change the world to accept that what they call women's rights and gay rights, homosexuals, they should also be allowed to marry, and they're forcing the churches. If you don't allow this, then we'll close your we won't give your church any special tax relief, or we'll close your church down. They're forcing them. So it's a very severe situation. They're emphasizing one symptom of modern Western life is that they emphasize rights. You have the right to do the right to do this, right to do that, but they don't emphasize duty. Whereas in traditional societies, duty is emphasized, and the word dharma, which is the cornerstone of traditional Indian civilization, that is often translated as duty. Arjuna was asking, what is my duty in this situation? To fight or not to fight? In a simple way we could say duty, although the word dharma has multiple levels of understanding, but basically it can be taken as one's duty. And then there are various levels of dharma. There's social dharma, spiritual dharma, and they often conflict, and that's the whole story of the Mahabharata, is conflicting dharmas and how they are resolved. So there's this emphasis on rights, that every individual should have the opportunity to enjoy themselves as much as possible. That's the idea. The idea is that, well, you only live once, and just enjoy yourself as much as possible. And you should have full right to enjoy yourself. But societies which are based on religious ethics understand that what we do, that has an effect on our future eternally. So, and there is sin and piety. There is a difference between good and evil. There is an ultimate standard of goodness. They just like, for instance, say, well, homosexuality, what's the harm? And if two people consent, what's the harm? They don't harm anyone. They certainly do. They harm each other's opportunity for God realization. And indulgence in what is a sinful act, it's a sexual act which is performed not for the sake of procreation, which is always sinful. It's not meant for recreation, it's meant for procreation. So, by doing that, they are harming each other's progress, or possible progress on the path of self-realization. So people have very different attitudes, and women in the modern age, and men also, have very different outlooks on what are the roles of women. Traditionally, women were... It's understood that their role is there as a women and mothers, but in the modern age, to be a housewife is considered the most stupid thing a woman could do. And it's, you know, you're just completely useless, and you have to achieve, you have to do something and show your full potential. And the idea is that women should be equal to men in all respects, and therefore they have women's boxing championships, for instance. And weightlifting, women, they do weightlifting. Their body is completely different, their mentality. Women have tried to, and many feminists point this out also, that women have only tried to be equal to men just by trying to imitate them. In other words, still, the role of the man is the model that women follow. So they're still tied to a male conception of what's the best thing to be, what's the actual role model. So, in modern society, women want to achieve and realize their full potential, and free mixing between boys and girls, even from in the schools, and then it's just considered normal that boys and girls all mix up, which even 20 years ago in India was not imaginable, and even some time before that, girls going to school at all was not imaginable. Anyway, there weren't schools in the formal sense. Even this whole education system, and there are so many things, this whole modern education system is just a big hoax to make people slaves to some misguided aim of life. There was no mass education. It was relatively informal. There were no certificates or entrance fees or education was mostly a few young men would gather around a Brahmin and he would be their guru and teach them, like Sandi Mandi Pandi Muni with Krishna. There were, in ancient India, there were Nalanda University was there, that was Buddhist actually. But in traditional Vedic culture, there weren't big educational institutions, and knowledge was, dvividya, there's para vidya and apara vidya, knowledge of the spiritual world and knowledge of the material world. Anyway, I spoke extensively on education last night, but the idea that women should also be educated and come up and realize their full potential and become heads of countries and boxers and airline pilots and of course many of them just end up working in factories. It's not the idea that women should have the freedom to go out and work. Oh yeah, great. And most of them end up in factories, because most of the jobs are at a menial level. So what's the fun in going out and working in a factory? They say, realize your full potential. You're working in a factory, and what's the potential? It just becomes a so-called necessity in modern life, that you have to bring in more money because you have so many more supposed needs. Hare Krishna. You have so many supposed needs. So there are completely different attitudes, and I'm talking about this subject in terms of broader society, and specifically within our Vaishnava society, because people come to Krishna consciousness and say, oh yeah, it's very nice philosophy and seems very nice. But we practice Krishna consciousness, but basically we have imbibed so many ideas since we were born. So Srila Prabhupada often said that a disciple should be like a blank slate, that one should come before the Guru as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the all-knowing Supreme Personality of Godhead. He came before his Guru and Ishvara Puripad, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Guru more murka deki kare lo shashan. My Guru saw that I was a great fool, and therefore he punished me or chastised, disciplined me. Murka tumi, his Guru told him. Murka tumi toma nahik vedanta dika. You're a fool, you have no qualification to study Vedanta. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed the example. Now, we're talking here about social issues, and Krishna consciousness is about spiritual life, but the two do, one's spiritual outlook will be affected by how one lives and behaves and acts within society. Just like free mixing, which is of the sexes, which is very prominent at the present time, that will incite lust, which is an enemy to spiritual life. And free mixing, the result of that is pre-marital contacts, and post-marital also, because people have the habit of mixing up with different sexual partners before marriage, and they continue the practice after marriage. So what's the point of marrying? And then again, you find in the Western countries, they also say, yeah, what is the point of marrying? They don't marry. They just live together like cats and dogs, as Prabhupada would say. Cats and dogs don't have marriage ceremonies. So within our society also, ISKCON, people come to Krishna consciousness and think, it's very nice, you chant Hare Krishna, and you follow these principles, this and that, but there isn't much training nowadays or even discussion of these principles, because it seems that many devotees, they have, they won't openly say that, but they don't really want to accept the traditional way of thinking that Srila Prabhupada introduced us to us, which is also the Shastric way of thinking. Oh yeah, I was saying that some even of Prabhupada's supposed to be followers, they portray him as, we can accept his spiritual teachings, but not his material teachings. And his attitudes were like that of it's an old school Victorian attitudes. But then Victorian means that at the latter part of the 19th century in Britain, Queen Victoria, she was the queen. Yes, not a king, it was a queen. So, and during that period, there was the social roles were, it was very conservative. The British, who expanded their empire much during that period, they were very conservative about this, and illicit sex and all this was very much frowned on, more so than at other periods in British history. It's interesting that the British expanded their empire during that time. I was saying that in decadent societies, which means morally broken down, they don't last. They break down completely, and they're overrun by savages, usually. They themselves are savages. They lose any moral strength, or they're just absorbed in gross sense gratification. So some people assume that Srila Prabhupada was just, he was influenced by this, and therefore he had such attitudes. But actually, Srila Prabhupada established all the points he said on the basis of Shastra. And if we say that's a Victorian attitude, well, that matches that of Shastra. It's what is given in Shastra is the social principles are very similar to those in religious societies all over the world. Therefore, Prabhupada opens that purport, which we were reading this morning, by saying that in every civilized society there are rules, religious rules, for governing behavior. And Prabhupada said that the demons, they don't want to accept this. So there's similar rules everywhere. That's why there's marriage, and only within marriage one is supposed to engage in sexual activities, and then one's supposed to look after the children. And throughout the world, homosexuality has been considered irreligious and wrong. These are universal principles. So it's not that Prabhupada was just old fashioned and out of date and he doesn't understand. He understands very well and can see the problems in human society, and therefore he's pointing them out. But persons who are attached to these actually, as Srila Prabhupada calls it, demoniac ideas, they don't want to accept it, and they say, therefore they try to present Srila Prabhupada as being influenced by mundane ideas, which are actually wrong. Although actually Srila Prabhupada is a fully pure devotee, and if we think he's, as Srila Prabhupada said, if we think that he has made a mistake, you have made a mistake. So these are some of the... It's interesting that in India, that many women coming to Krishna consciousness, especially from a village background, coming to ISKCON, they actually become, while they're in the village, they have they're trained up in the traditional way. But when they come to ISKCON, they see that, well, there's so many divorces and this and that, and then they actually become less pious in terms of their Sri Dharma than they were previously. And this is, it's actually being promoted, just like Western devotees, some of them, and it's not that every Western devotee is completely into these modern adharmic ideas, but many of them are, as I was saying, even the rules, certain rules are passed by our governing body commission, which they're more in line with modern feminism than that of Shastra. So you'll find that certain devotees in the West, they come and they preach to the Indian women that why are you submissive to your husband? You shouldn't be submissive to your husband. And then men have told me that their wife comes home all of a sudden one day and they're arguing them, fighting them, what happened, you know? And all of a sudden, we're married for 15 years and all of a sudden the attitude completely, oh, your husband is exploiting you and why do you follow him? And the result is chaos. Divorce is very common in ISKCON, sorry to say. And maybe in India ISKCON more than in the society at large because of these attitudes. And in North America there's what they call it the Grihastha ministry or something. They're taking some steps to try to arrest this problem of divorce, but their approach actually makes the whole syndrome worse because it's based on modern psychology, which, as I was saying yesterday, is based on Freudian ideas. And the idea, instead of telling the men and women devotees that you have to follow your dharma, and even if it's rough, definitely it's going to be rough. They say that man and woman, when they come together, as Prabhupada said, man is good, woman is good, and the combination is not good. It's always problematic. And in the modern age, relationships between any, it's very difficult to find any good relationships at any level. And husband and wife, there's always going to be some problems. But then, in the modern so-called psychologists, they talk a lot about compatibility and all that. Well, of course, that's there in Indian marriage, but they check it out before they get married, the astrological compatibility. But in the Western world, they have this idea that, and it's very prominent in India now because attitudes have changed so much. There's this whole idea of falling in love, which is completely nonsense. Because we find that people fall in love and then they very quickly fall out of love. So it's not love. It's not actual love. If you feel, I love this person so much, and then, you know, after 2 years you want to, or less, you want to divorce them, it wasn't love in the first place. It's infatuation or lust. So there's this idea in the West, which has come from the world. Of course, it's been there in India also. But you fall in love, and they have this idea, well, you try and live with each other for some time to see if you like each other. You can't tell, because both parties are play acting. And then when they get married, then okay, that's when the real excitement begins. As they say, there's an engagement ring and a wedding ring, and after that, boxing ring. There are jokes like that. So. And it's not always like that. But the idea is that there should be psychological compatibility. But in other words, what it means is that, well, if I don't like you, I'm not really, you know, why should we live together? Because we don't really get on well with each other. And then, so they'll advise our Grihastha ministry or whatever it's called. They advise that, well, you're not really getting on. We'll try, you know, a little bit more, and then you have to adjust. And if it doesn't work, well, the best thing is to get divorced. So they're encouraging it because they're giving the wrong basis, that you're trying to be psychologically compatible. But it should be that the basis of family life is duty, dharma. And that even if you don't like each other, once you get married, you've made a religious commitment and you have to stick to it. And before the divorce laws, guess what? There was no divorce. And once you're in a marriage, you have to stick with it. And so somehow or other, they would adjust. Some years ago, in Russia, a young man and his wife came to see me with their young daughter. I'd never seen them before. And they asked for my blessings for divorce. And I told them, no, definitely not. I'm completely against it. They say, well, we have so many problems, we can't get on with each other. You know, how can we live with each other all our lives? I said, look, you got married, you have a daughter, and you have to stick with it. And they were submissive enough to stick with it. And, you know, 15 years later, they don't really have any problem because they thought, oh, we have to live together. Okay. And then they worked it out between them. But as long as the idea was there of divorce, they thought, you know, it was, they could just go on with the boxing ring more and more. I don't know if it was physical, maybe it was more verbal, I don't know. But once they had enough faith in my words to think that, okay, we've got to stay together, and they went on. And they don't have serious problems. It was just manasijam. It was created in the mind. That's all. So this whole different outlook that we're here to enjoy life, and everyone should use their maximum potential. So if the husband gets in the way of the wife, she should just kick him out of the way, and you don't like each other, so get divorced. Hey, how about this? A woman wants to realize her maximum potential. What about the potential for having children? That's the natural potential of a woman's body, isn't it? And actually the natural psychology that goes with it is there. You'll see a little girl, 4 years old, and she sees a little baby, she'll pick up the baby and behave in a motherly way, isn't it? It's a natural tendency. You don't have to train them. Little girls, from the youngest age, they have the tendency, motherly tendency. But in modern society, the demoniac society, they cheat. No, this is all foolish. You have to be an airline pilot. What do you want to be a housewife for? The natural tendency is for women to have motherly affection, but that's been labeled as foolish. What a horrible society. And so naturally women, even if they do become airline pilots, they're always frustrated because the natural psychology that goes with a woman's body is to want to be a mother. But once you are a mother, then you have a duty to the children to actually be a mother and not just be a mother in name only, where you're out at work all the time and then the children, they never see you. You have to look after them. And mother means it's a full-time job. It's a life of sacrifice. And actually, women, their natural psychology is to like that. And if I was giving this lecture in other forums, then by now I might, you know, I'd probably have people physically attacking me. Quite possible, actually. Really. Because they hate to hear such things. They've become so cut off from reality that they think that this is terrible. You see, you're misleading the women into a life of submission and being exploited. But the fact is that children deserve to have parents and not just a mother who they, a father who they never see. And they come home from school, of course, as I was saying, this idea of mass education, that's another bluff on human society. But anyway, they come home from school and there's no mother there, no, and they get some food out of the fridge. But the mother, her life is naturally to have children and look after them, cook for them. That's the pleasure.
That you risk this reception?
In Vaishnava forums, it's also quite possible. Maybe not physically attacking, but definitely verbally. So, yes, the natural tendency of women and to have children and to like that. To like being a mother and be happy on that platform. But in modern society that's suppressed from the beginning. No, you have to get a job and work hard, show yourself, have a career, be a success. And who suffers? The children. Because they don't get mother's love. The mother's too busy for them. So they don't get mother's food. So even physically they suffer because they just get something from a cafe or hotel or something. And then you wonder why there are so many psychological problems. There's a reason. One reason is that people they have unnatural hopes. Just like it's quite common in the Western world now that there are gangs of young women who go around and attack others. They attack them and take their money. There may be men, women, old, young, whatever. I mentioned this about 10 years ago. I just come back from the West, and I'd read in a newspaper about this phenomena in Britain of gangs of young girls, like 13 years old, like 12, 13 years old, who go around with knives and attack people and maybe kill them also and take their money, and then they use it for drinking or whatever. And I mentioned this to an American couple, a devotee, young man and woman, who were living in India, and said, "Oh, we're from Detroit, which is a high crime rate city in America." He said, that's new in Britain, but in Detroit, that's been there for years. They weren't surprised at all. I was quite surprised. You know, you hear about gangs of 12 and 13-year-old girls. I mean, when I was a kid in Britain, even you wouldn't get gangs of 12 and 13-year-old boys, what to speak of girls. I mean, gangs, but they'd fight fist fights and not but killing people. That's a bit extreme. So, but in the newspaper I read this report about, they said, well, one major reason for this is because the TV and in the schools, they're telling girls that you can do it, you can get it, you can be a great success, you got to conquer the world, but factually they can't. And at most they're going to be, they're going to get a job in a factory or something like that, and they become more and more frustrated due to unreal expectations. So, women, their natural psychology is to want to be mothers. And that is fulfilling their potential and their duty. Both the two things go together. But in modern society, because they've brainwashed you into thinking you have to work, and it's a great opportunity. You see, you have the freedom to work. But what's actually happening is these big industrialists, they're exploiting you to they get more people to work for them. And meanwhile, like I say, the children are neglected. The children they become angry at the whole of society, and it's a whole syndrome that increases generation after generation. And so there's this women, they don't get, they have this idea, I have to have a career, so they don't get married, and then many of them have the idea, I don't want to get married. Why should I get married? It's just a burden having children, this and that, and living with a man, there are so many men, I can pick up one anytime. But often what happens, I see in India at least, when they get to about the age of 30, they think, oh my God, I'm getting old, and my skin, there's a few lines, I'm getting old. I didn't get married. I want to get married. They've been saying, I don't want to get married. I don't want to get married. I know I want to get married. And then no one wants to marry them because they've already been used so many times is one thing. And another thing, the men want to all marry beautiful young girls. And when you're 30, your beauty is diminishing. So then they become desperate. Or they have this thing, we have to marry in the caste, and then our daughter, and then goes on, she gets to 30, 31, 32, and then they just marry her to anyone because they're just trying to find someone who will marry her. So the natural and normal thing, as Srila Prabhupada explained, Srila Prabhupada said many things which were in the modern age just sound totally unrealistic and bizarre, but Srila Prabhupada was for child marriage, which is literally a crime in modern India. But Srila Prabhupada explained that as soon as a girl comes to puberty, she's thinking, where is the husband? And even I know one of my godbrothers, he was telling me that his daughter, when she was 5 years old, she was asking, when am I going to get married? And she's in the West. They're thinking about that from a, so it's settled up at a young age. And then they don't have any anxiety. And they get married young, and then when they come to the age of puberty, they go to the young girls, go to their husband's home, and then it's already fixed up. It's all settled. Just a few days ago, I was told this is still going on among one of my disciples. He's from a Tamil Smata Aya family. So he was saying, I want to get my daughter married. And I said, well, it's about, and traditionally it'd be about the age of marriage. Your daughter's 5 years old. And say, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm going to get her married within the next year. It still goes on in their community. And among the boys that are going to be purohits or priests, they still have that system that they'll marry. And then when the girl gets 13 or 14 after the first flowers come, in Sanskrit, it's one of the words is pushpa for the, anyway, you know what. So after that, they go to the boys' home, then they start having children. And you may think, well, that's very primitive, and they don't get the chance to choose their husband. But choosing the husband is very dangerous, because you're overcome by material infatuation, which is called lust, and you often, generally, a young girl, she doesn't have the discrimination to understand who is the right person for her. So the traditional system is the parents arrange it based on astrological compatibility, caste, and there are so many considerations. They're very careful, and then there's a whole social system to back it up. And then there's a whole training from the very beginning. Chastity. The chastity of women is considered very important. What's better, to have so many boyfriends you can't even remember them all? How many men have used you? Or to be a respectable wife and mother? And what happens is, just like one of my sisters, she never married. She was into, women should be independent. She never married. Now she's almost 60 years old, and she never married, and no one cares for her. She has no children, no husband, obviously, and she's just got a miserable old age. She's just moving into it. No one cares. She never cared enough for anyone to commit herself to anyone, so no one cares for her. Miserable. Whereas in India or in traditional societies, yes, women do have a submissive role, but they're respected and looked after. And actually, although it's said that the husband is the man is the head of the home, but practically the woman is. Practically speaking, they run everything. Like Draupadi, she ran the whole household. They're in charge, and they realize their potential by managing a family, which is no small job, which is one reason why maybe in the modern age women don't want to do it. It's a big responsibility, and it's a big headache. But to bring up good children, that's an important job, isn't it? That's what Arjuna was saying, that if the women are spoiled, then the children will be spoiled, and then the whole society will be spoiled. So women have such an important role. It's not an unimportant role. It's a vital role. That was Arjuna's his fear, that strishu dushtashu konteya varshnaya jayate varna sankara. That if women are not protected and they're just victims of marauding men, then bad children will be born, and then the whole society will become spoiled. So women, they're the first guru for the children. They train them in basic principles of human behavior. And you'll find that that was there. The women were very much respected. On one hand, there's control, which is required for protection. But on the other hand, there's great respect. And in the modern age, that's not there. Women can't expect to be. They can't expect to have the same amount of respect if they don't act in a respectable way. And they just make themselves available to everyone. And women are just another commercial entity. They're up in the marketplace. Get a job. We'll pay you this much. They'll move from one company to another, and they're just, like I said, another commercial entity. They've not taken the position of self-sacrifice. They're competing with everyone else. So, I'm just trying to present here some of the counter arguments to the modern propaganda that women are much better off. They're much better off now. How are they better off? They don't marry until much later, and then they eventually be getting children at the age of 30, which is too late. Medical studies show that women who have children later, they have more problems in conceiving, in bearing children. They're more likely to get gynecological problems, including gynecological cancer and breast cancer, because the mammary gland, or the breast, the function is to give milk. And if they don't, then it's unnatural. And some reaction is there. So Srila Prabhupada was for early marriage and having many children, but in modern society it's hum do hamare do. Means may Mary biwi Mary Betty or ekuta bihe. Hum do hamare do. Like that. This is the But having many children, that's the women will say it's very bothersome, but that this idea that I should just live comfortably and I won't have children to bother me, and then I can just sit and watch the TV or go out to work or whatever. But again, that's the life of sacrifice, that women have many children. And we see that, at least this is my observation, that when there are many children, that, it's more natural like that. When there are several children, and they don't become so much self-centered. They have to share with each other, and it's not that the parents' attention is only on them, on one or two children. Generally we find if there's only one child, that's my observation, it's not always true, but if there's only one child of the parents, that they often are very arrogant, and they think that everything is meant for them, because that's what it's been, that's how their parents treat them. They're used to their parents just serving them, and everything, the parents' affection is just on them only. And they never learn to share anything. So, hamdo hamare ek is definitely not good, and having more children is better. Anyway, there are various points. I won't make them all. Tomorrow morning I'll go on and make some more points. Well, maybe I'll do one or two more and then we'll finish. And questions will be tomorrow morning after I've finished going through these various points. I guess I'll get through them. Yeah, another thing which Srila Prabhupada advocated was polygamy, which means having more than one wife. I guess it could mean. Can it also mean having more? That's polyandry, isn't it? Having more than one husband. But having more than one wife. And it still in India we see that among Hindus some men do have more than one wife. Usually not more than one extra. But it used to be common that men would have more than one wife. Especially in certain castes. The Vaishyas, they would often have more than one wife. And Srila Prabhupada explained that the woman population generally exceeds the men, but every woman must get married. And so that's a kindness of men to accept more than one wife. And it was just accepted and considered normal a short time ago. But nowadays, it's not like that. People, they may have several wives, one after the other. But that's not really a husband and wife relationship, is it? So, that's considered, nowadays women, they don't like that. Oh, I have I have to share my husband with other women. But actually the whole idea, the joint family is a natural with brothers living together and with their wives, and then you may have more than one wife, and in this way there's it's like a whole community in one family. It's actually much better for the children to have many mothers. It's a big job to look after children. Mothers, what do you think? That's another thing. The young girls nowadays, they often say, "I'll only marry you if we're not going to live with your parents." They don't want to live with their in-laws. But then, when they get a child, then they call them, "Please come." Because it's a big strain. Children are a 24-hour job. And there's no time, like 9 to 5, and no, it's any time of day and night. You're on call. And you may go for days without getting any proper sleep. So again, it's a life of sacrifice. But if there are many mothers, for one thing, it's psychologically much better for the children. And then there's many children altogether also. And it alleviates the burden. Instead of one woman having to do all the cooking, all the cleaning, and look after children at the same time, there's a whole group of them doing it. And that shares it all out. And they also have community and they're like that. So polygamy, joint marriage, these are all very natural and a better way to live. But then again, in the modern way of life, because people are they're parts of the modern economic system. So people are seen as workers. And so that the joint family system is very suitable for an agrarian society. Again, we come back to Varnashram society. And to have many children is very good in an agrarian society, because then you have more workers. They're all helping with the work. Nowadays, there are no children, they shouldn't go to work. They should go to school so they can get trained up to work in a more sophisticated way later on. Interestingly, they don't make any objection to children working as actors in the movie industry or posing or as models for the advertisement industry. I never saw anyone in the West or the East complain about that. But the whole family system is based on exploitive economics, in which they feed all this rubbish to you that you're getting a better way of life. So again, Srila Prabhupada's revolutionary ideas: go back to the land, live simply, and follow the old patterns. Women, you may say, well, in the past they were submissive and now they have more potential and this and that, but women in the past, they had a fixed husband, they had respect, dignity, which they don't have nowadays. They're usable objects. That's all. No one, and like I say, no one, if you go through 3-4 husbands, then how are your children going to, they're not going to care for you. They see that you don't care for them, you're more interested in your own happiness than in providing a stable family home. So naturally the children, they don't care for their parents also. The parents don't care for the children don't care for the parents, and the modern society is, as I'm trying to, again and again, try to convince whoever might be interested to listen, it's a total violence on the members of the society. All the ideas, Prabhupada called it a slaughterhouse civilization. Practically every idea they have is wrong. And this questionnaire was brought by some of Bhakti Raghav Maharaj's disciples. What are the merits and demerits of the modern educational system? Merits? Well, there are no merits. No, what are the merits? You could say if there's anything, that if they learn to read, they can read Prabhupada's books. But then you can also hear that from from devotees, it's not necessary that everyone learn to. There's so many faults. It's a total exploitation, and they do it in such a way that you think, now I'm better off. Well, they're totally exploiting you and misusing you. So, Srila Prabhupada was saying polygamy. Now, Srila Prabhupada also said that we shouldn't introduce this in our society because people may blame us. This was in the Western world, he said this. And another thing he said was that, the society can't support family, multiple wife families, and that some people may misuse this as a facility for extra sex. Now, as one of my godbrothers explained, I accept this explanation, when Prabhupada said we can't allow it in our society, that means if someone's a temple president and is being maintained by the ISKCON society, that they shouldn't have more than one wife, because why should ISKCON, as a religious and charitable institution, support that? But Prabhupada, on principle, supported that repeatedly in his books. He said it's a social necessity. So what I understand from this is that if a man has the economic capability to do so, if he's not employed, you could say, by ISKCON, but he's independently generating his livelihood and he's prepared to do so, then that is acceptable. Although it may not be allowed legally, but according to the laws of Shastra, then that should be allowed. And we see that practically, we have the problem in our ISKCON society. We're preaching and many young women come and they don't get husbands or so that's a consideration also, that men may accept more than one wife. I think you're a bit old for that, not you. Now it's time for you to retire. But that can be considered also, that men may accept, and they say, wow, this is too much. But it was part of society up till recent times. It was just considered. But now, because we've been trained in a different way, there's the idea, oh, this is something wrong, it's something terrible, it's very bad. Where did all these ideas come from? Not from Shastra. And nor, as Srila Prabhupada has pointed out, is it beneficial for human society that women should remain unmarried. Then they're just going to be exploited and they won't be happy, they won't be protected. So every woman should get married. That's one important principle. And the sooner the better. It doesn't mean you have to rush into whoever you meet. The first person you meet tomorrow morning should be entered into carefully also. But it also shouldn't be delayed inordinately. It's such a funny thing, here I am, I'm a sannyasi, and I actually have to preach to women that you should get married, and then after they get married, you have to tell them, now you have to have children. It's so strange. It's the most natural and normal thing that they should do, but they're so messed up by the modern educational system that they don't want to get married, they don't want to have children, but then they end up thinking, oh no, I have to get married, when it's too late, no one wants to marry them. Well, they get married and then they say, no, I don't want to have children, I only want to do bhakti, I don't have any children. And then they get 30, 32, 30, oh, I want to have children. It's just crazy. So anyway, I'll finish there, and I won't take any questions now. I'll finish going over these points. I should finish them tomorrow morning. And then you can start shooting out the questions, whatever it is. Again, these are general principles that I understand that modern society is different, and it's easier said than done, many of these things, but I'm just talking on at least on general principles, which gradually can be taken up in our lives. Just like Madhav Gopinath Prabhu, for instance, and his wife is highly qualified from the educational point of view, more so than him, he tells me. But she's accepted the principle, these principles, and she's not going out to work, and she understands the principle and is happy with that. And actually, there are many women. Some women may say this is the kind of preaching which messes up women's lives, but many understand that yes, actually, this is what we need, and this is good for us. And I actually have some disciples who became my disciple, women and couples, because they thought, yes, this is the kind of guidance we need. So, like I say, within ISKCON, there's like a cultural divide, and there are others the women disciples will come and say, I have so many problems with my husband, and I'll say, divorce him. But I never say that. They're encouraging it. What's the use? He's a demon, divorce him. I never say that. So, different people are attracted to different things, but I'm pretty confident that what I'm saying is in line with Krishna's ideas. Because divorce is not one of Krishna's ideas. It's not there in Shastra. In Sanskrit they made up a word. There's no traditional word for divorce. Vivaha vichhed. But the common word in Hinduism is a Urdu word. It comes from Muslim culture. Talak. There's no word in traditional Indian or Hindu culture. It didn't exist. There was no idea of it. It's all a modern introduction. So our proposal is that the traditional Indian way of life is the best for human stability and peacefulness, or making the best bargain out of a bad situation, which our world is the best situation. And the only one which is really suitable for making progress in Krishna consciousness. Because if you try to live a lifestyle that is basically demoniac and be Krishna conscious, it's not going to work. Krishna has given a certain kind of lifestyle and rules and regulations and attitudes to be followed, and it's demoniac even to think that we can have a better idea than that of Krishna. It's foolish, it's arrogant, it's stupid, and it's demoniac, and it's a disaster. So again, it may not be easy to change one's way of thinking very quickly, or even if one agrees with these principles, it may be often difficult to implement for various reasons. But reform begins with understanding the principles. So like I said, I'm speaking on that, and Krishna willing, I'll continue tomorrow morning, and I think I'll get through all these points and then open it up for questions. Not now. Now you can take prasadam, kindly cooked probably by the Matajis. Is it? Oh, there's a cook also, the male cook. Yeah, that's women's pleasure. They cook nice food and they see their children take it and like that. Nowadays, as Prabhupada said, modern girls are all rubbish. It's a quote from Prabhupada. They don't know even how to cook a chapati. They have a PhD, but they have no idea how to cook a chapati. Some years ago, one devotee, he got married, and he told me after he got married, he found out his wife doesn't know how to cook anything. But he knew how to cook khichdi, so he taught her that, and then one day he'd cook, and she, and the other day, and well, where's the fun in being married? Your wife, she's so busy working, and she doesn't know how to cook, and then he doesn't know how to cook, and miserable. Can't even get any decent food. So, Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Thank you, Vasanand Prabhu, for coming. You want to say something? It's probably the same things that I'd be saying, or I've already said.
I asked somebody why he's getting his daughter so much educated, and he said, "We have to. You have to be economically independent."
That's another thing they say, that the husband will leave them. So I
don't know how to cook, and why they don't know how to cook because they're at school instead of at home with their mother.
Well, actually, you can get a degree in home science, and they teach you how to cook something and how to look after the home and all this. What they were taught at home, they now go to college and get a degree in it. Home science. Totally crazy. Totally insane. It's just, the extent of the madness is unbelievable. There used to be a time in the Western world where they thought that the earth was flat, and that if you go far enough, you'll fall off the edge. True, right? Now you're all laughing, but it's true, right? Christopher Columbus, he almost had a mutiny before he so-called discovered America, because his crew in the ship, they thought, if we go any further, we're going to fall off the edge. Stupid, right? When we look back at it, we think, how stupid, how ignorant. Well, the time is going to come in human society when they look back at our modern, sophisticated, proud society who think we know everything and say, how stupid they were. They were teaching that man has descended from monkeys and everything has come into being by chance. And in the future, people are going to look back and laugh. How could people be so stupid? And we're so proud. Oh, I got an education. You say, science, I'm a scientist, and I can prove evolutionary theory. See, it's a fact. It's established by science that my grandfather was a monkey. My ancestors were monkeys. Prabhupada said, well, maybe yours are, but mine were Manu and Brahma. And These are our ancestors. Maybe yours is a monkey. What do you mean ancestors? I mean, what is the, apart from a little difference in bodily formation, what is the difference between you and a monkey? You're monkey-like, jumping from one partner to another and fighting with each other and no principles of cultured living. Maybe Charles Darwin was right. At least they're trying to, by their monkey-like behavior, they're trying to prove that Charles Darwin was right. Hare Krishna, please take prasad and look forward to seeing you all tomorrow morning.